You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to another edition of the AHDB's Food and Farming podcast. My name is Mark Campbell, and I'm a member of the AgriLeader team here at AHDB. I'm delighted to be joined today by Yorkshire-based pig and arable farmer, Richard Lumthorpe, who employs 20 people within his diverse family farming business. In today's episode, we will delve into the subject of training and development, both technical and leadership and management skills within people in a family farming business, and how investing in skills as an asset can help break some of the barriers that the industry currently is confronted with. If you have any questions after your listen of today's episode, or want to find out more about the AgriLeader programme and activity, you can find all the information and details of how to get in touch in the episode show notes.
Hi, I'm Neil Adams from Promar International, and I'm very grateful to be talking to Richard Lumthorpe today, a pig farmer from Yorkshire, who has quite a history, actually, of working with other farmers and various organisations promoting the value of training staff. So I thought it was a great opportunity for us to share some thoughts with Richard. And without further ado, I'll hand over to him and he can tell you a little bit about himself. And then we'll dig into some questions.
Hi, Neil. Well, we're basically a family farming business based in East Riding of Yorkshire, and third generation. We're arable and pigs. The crops we grow are the boring usual mixture of wheat, oilseed rape, vining peas, which I suppose are not that common these days, sugar beet. And the pigs are all outdoors on rented land. With about 20% of the production going to free range finishing, which goes through my daughter's butchery and her retail outlets as free range pork, sausage, bacon, and so on and so forth. And in the context of today's discussion, we employ about 20 staff.
That sounds like quite a challenging business with a lot going on. Obviously branching out into retail as well, so there's certainly a lot of skills I'm sure needed to run a business of that complexity. When we talked earlier, you said you had concerns about training staff, or at least you could see the need for improved staff training. Can you expand on that a little bit? How did you come to feel that there was a need to do something about this challenge of training staff?
Well, both training and recruitment, really, and two things came about at roughly the same time. Firstly, in about 1998, the pig industry was basically in meltdown. Prices were through the floor, pig were going out of business, and it was incredibly difficult to get skilled staff. But the imperative was that we actually needed to improve productivity, but with a scarce staff resource. So we kind of had to look to within the businesses to get this improved productivity and start building a valued and valuable staff resource. And on the recruitment and what should I say, the image of the industry at the time, my son had just sat his A-levels and the headmaster called him to his office, his study one day after he'd got the results, and so said to my son, "Well, Jonathan, congratulations on such wonderful A-level results, but isn't it a shame you want to become a farmer?" Well, as you can imagine, when Jonathan told me this, I was not impressed one bit. I had words with headmaster, but I went around like a bear with a sore head for a couple of years, cussing this headmaster. But then one day I was reflecting, and I thought, well, whose fault is it that this headmaster has such a poor image of our industry? Is it his fault for not finding out, or my fault for not telling him? And I came to the conclusion, and I'm still of this view now, that it is my fault and the industry's fault for not letting people know about the complexity and technical requirements and management skills of the modern farming industry in the UK. So those two things came together coincidentally at the same time and have really driven me ever since.
I think that's a really interesting observation. And certainly I think the breadth of skills that people working on farms today have are quite phenomenal, because equipment is very complex. In livestock systems, there's generally elements of, you know, data and computing required. And so attention to animal welfare has, or the need to attend to animal welfare has never been greater. So I think today we are certainly looking, or the industry needs to employ really, really good quality staff and to make sure that they have the skills in order to help enterprises function well. So you said that you became interested in providing more training. How did you therefore kick this all off, provide the solution to this recruitment and training provision?
Well, as I just said, the industry, pig industry is in turmoil with prices on absolutely on the floor and below. But a group of us came together, predominantly Yorkshire and Lincolnshire based, with a few outliers. We came together to see what we could do about this staff shortage. And we decided we would form a training company purely at that stage for the use of members' staff, mainly because at the time, the training model, if you like, in the industry seemed to be that the providers, the main providers of training, were saying, this is what we have got. Come and get it if you want it. Well, we were finding increasingly that we didn't particularly have a great deal of interest in what was on offer. Well, so we turned it round and said, this is what we need. Can you deliver it? This is what is now called employer-led training and development. But in those days, back 23 years ago, it was quite novel for a group of farmers to get together and tell the training providers what they wanted from training.
So as a group of farmers, you came together and you decided that the training that was being offered wasn't what you needed. How did you decide what you did need?
Right, well, right at the outset of setting this training business up, we employed someone purely to organise training for the member businesses, but also, most importantly, to undertake a company-wide training needs assessment of all the staff in all the member businesses. Basically, what skills have the business got at that point in time, what skills were needed, and organise a training programme to fill those gaps. Sometimes that training can be ad hoc, very little structure to it at all, and certainly not needs-driven. I mean, in a cropping environment, you wouldn't expect to spray a crop without first of all assessing its need for treatment or similarly with an animal in that respect. You would first of all assess what was needed, and so it needs to be with training. So we employed this training organiser, and training programmes were developed to suit the business needs.
And were they in the main technical skills that you were training, Richard, or was it more into what I'd call a business management area?
Across the piece, the greatest number of courses that were organised were of a technical nature: artificial insemination, nutrition, managing outdoor sows, so on and so forth. But there were at least a couple that I recall of pure leadership type courses, which were of a much longer duration than the simple one day or half day technical courses.
And what would you say were your observations with your own staff, but also anecdotally, what the other members of the group told you about the worth of the training? How was the training being received by the people who were attending?
Well, I can only, it's an anecdote, but it's a true anecdote, which demonstrates to me the importance and value that staff place on training. There's a pig producer not too distant. He rang me up one day and said, Richard, I understand you organise training for pig producers. I said, yes. He said, well, can you organise me some for my staff? I said, well, what sort of training do you want, John? He said, well, anything. I said, what do you mean, anything? He said, well, anything. I said, well, when do you want this anything delivered, John? He said, well, as soon as possible. I said, well, come on, John, cut me some slack. What's going on here? I'm not really up to speed with why you're requesting this. So he said, he came clean with me. He said, well, look, truth of the matter is, Richard, all your member businesses of your training company, they're all training staff, and my staff, some of them are leaving to join your member businesses because they know they're going to get trained. Now, that is as good an example as I know of demonstrating the value that staff put on being trained and having time and money and effort invested in their skills, in their careers.
Thank you, Richard. I sense there's a lot of gut feel about assessing the financial return on any money that you invest in training. This is in complete contrast to when we're buying a piece of equipment or maybe buying some land, as we've grown to be relatively efficient at assessing the return or payback on such investments. But how would you go about doing this in relation to training?
Return on investment in training is notoriously difficult to pin down. And without a doubt, we as an industry need to do some more objective work to demonstrate this to a much wider range of farmers and growers. But one of the courses that BPEX, then BPEX, now HDB Pork, developed, which the leadership course stretched over about 18 months, the Professional Managers Development Scheme. And part of that process, the final passing out parade, if you like, they all have to demonstrate what value had been added to their businesses during that 18-month course. And invariably, year on year, we're getting reports of a course cost of about a few thousand quid, resulting in a return on that investment into several hundreds of thousands of pounds. And that is consistent year in, year out. And so we're having people tell us what they're getting, which in many respects is perfectly good enough for me.
I think it's a very good observation. I interview quite a lot of people for various roles. And one of the most common questions that I'm asked is, what are you going to do for my development? You know, people aren't just interested in a job. They're not just interested in a salary, but they're also interested in their own careers. They're interested in knowing where how they're going to grow and how they're going to develop. And our investment into staff skills and development benefits us. But the quid pro quo of that, the opposite side of that, is obviously their own future and their own development, which is incredibly important to people.
But of course, one thing which we must get away from is the oft-heard phrase that if I train him or her, he might leave. Well, somebody once turned around to me and said, yeah, I've heard that before, Richard, but what I say is, if I train him, he might leave. If I don't train him, he might stay, which is basically saying that people without any aspiration are likely to hang around for a long, long time. And as an industry, I think we've got to move into a situation where we invest in staff and we hope to get 5 good years out of them. And then the cycle starts again, new blood coming through, train them. But for too many years, I think we've just relied on people basically staying with the business from school till pension. And as we go forward with all the challenges ahead, we've got to become a much more dynamic industry in that respect.
You can see from the numbers, but also from practical experience, that it's far less common for people to stay in one job for their entire life. And in fact, I think you probably find that most people probably do change jobs every 4 or 5 years. But I don't think that's a reason not to train people. I suppose defining preoccupations, I suppose, of anybody who's working either in technology or any form of production today is that, yes, we have fabulous technology, but it doesn't work itself. It can do a lot of stuff itself, but it still needs to be managed and it still needs to be operated. And the skills behind that are quite challenging. So I see that as being a defining challenge for employers and employees. I call it that kind of man-machine interaction. And how do we get that right? How do we get the most out of some phenomenally expensive technology and actually fairly expensive employees as well? How do we maximize the opportunity that all this wonderful technology is going to provide us? So
you just talked about investment in technology. What I'm talking about is investment in skills. For too long, I think, too many people have looked on training as a cost, not as an investment. As you'll be well aware, trading costs, they come straight off the bottom line, whereas investments sit on the balance sheet as assets. And what greater asset can there be than our people? And we need that shift in mindset away from cost to investment in an asset.
Completely agree, Richard. There is a lot of investment. There is a lot of technology on farms. But if we're not investing in the staff, in order that they can make the most of it and optimize all these resources that farms have, then really we're not going to make much progress. So again, I'm totally in agreement with you there. I want to change tack a little bit now, if I may. And I want to ask you, I want to talk to the development of farmers and family members, because we've talked a lot about developing staff, but I'm also very interested in, you know, how managers, which invariably are farmers, family members, I think something like 67% of farms don't even have any employed staff. So if we are going to improve our effectiveness and efficiency and competitiveness, how do we go about developing family members and leaders of businesses? What do you think needs to happen to get more training and development delivered to that group?
Well, I think the first thing I'd say is that to a certain extent it's a bit of a generational thing. And I would suggest that the generation that's been coming through for several years now into farming businesses, that's family members. A lot of them have been through a sophisticated education system, been through very high quality further and higher education, coming out with valuable degrees and so on and so forth. So I think that will bring its own change with it. The other thing, which is obviously very topical, is change is coming whether we like it or not, and we have to get ready for it. Most figures would point to our productivity in the UK having fallen behind many of our international competitors. We can't simply ignore that and hope it goes away. We have to improve our businesses. But the analogy I use is that as farmers, and I classify myself as a reasonably typical farmer, we love looking over the fence at the neighbours. We just love it. But when we look over and he's making a better job than we perhaps are, we have all sorts of excuses. He's got better land, he's got better kit, he's got more money, he's got better land, but better breed of pigs or whatever. We tend to make excuses. What I would suggest we need to do is accept that actually he or she is simply better at what he does, more skilled, has more skilled staff. And so I would suggest that, maybe slightly controversial, and I might get a few brickbats thrown at me, but I would suggest rather than looking over the fence all the time, occasionally we need to look in the mirror.
Okay, well, that's an interesting observation. I hope you don't get too many brickbats, Richard. So I'm coming towards the end now. If you had a magic wishing wand that you could wave to improve management and leadership skills amongst farmers and farm managers across the UK, is there one skill you think that farmers need to improve?
I've thought about this quite a bit, and there's an author, he's dead now, an author of management and leadership manuals called Stephen Covey, and he has a matrix with plotting importance against urgency, classifying tasks as being important or urgent. And the important tasks are the ones that are more strategic, if you like, and involve planning. The urgent are things which just have to be dealt with, and we're all familiar with those urgent tasks. But leadership is all about dealing with the important tasks. They're very rarely urgent, but they need to be done. And part of those that important type of task is investing in yourself and investing in your people. That doesn't rank as urgent. It's just part of a long-term strategy for our businesses. And you've probably heard me use the word investment more times today than you find on the front page of the Financial Times, and that is quite deliberate. As I've said just now, we've got to view skills, training, careers as an investment in the business and in the industry to make sure that we can become once again a world-class leader in the trade which we ply.
Stephen Covey is famous for his seven habits, isn't he? Seven habits of highly effective people. And I recognise the model that you described. The other thing that he said, which is completely appropriate to our discussion here, is he talked about sharpening the saw. Now, what did he mean by sharpening the saw? Well, of course, if you want to cut some wood, you need a sharp saw, but they don't sharpen themselves. One way that you can cut your wood effectively is to make sure that you're investing in sharpening your saws. And your saws, as he saw them, were the people who are working in the business. So I think that's a brilliant place to end our discussion today, Richard. Thank you very much for your time.
You've reminded me, and I hope you reminded everybody else, of the importance in investing in skills, our own skills, and those of our workforce. Thank you again, Richard.